The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. Today we're going to be looking at the interesting topic of greenwashing and green hushing. And my guest is Adam Bastock, who is the founder of Small 99. Adam, welcome. Before we get into the sort of technicalities of greenwashing, can you talk a little bit about Small 99?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's exciting to be here. Small 99 came out of a frustration, really, of a lot of the information that I was seeing around net zero and sustainability as a broader topic, in that a lot of the information I was seeing was aimed at corporates and at large organisations who had either a lot of time or a lot of money to spend on these things, and small businesses were being a little bit left out here. The reason why that's such a big issue is that 99% of the economy is a small business, so 99% of businesses that are registered in the UK have less than 49 employees. That carries across most of Europe and the US as well, so it's a global problem. Less than 9 employees, there's around 96%, and that's, I think it's around 5.7 million businesses in the UK that are within that segment, so it's a huge number.
Hang on, let's go over that again. So there are nearly 6 million, 5.7 million businesses with less than 9 employees.
Correct. I think that's the figure. It's around that, wow, that kind of ballpark. It changes every year because obviously businesses, yeah, open up and close down, but yeah, around 6 million are less than 49 employees, and I think it's about 5.7 million for less than 9 employees. And it sounds shocking until you start thinking about it in a real-world situation. So if you walk down your local high street, it's your local hairdresser, your local cafe, your local pub, all of those, news agents, all of these different shops and all of these small entities, they didn't have a huge impact, but collectively they have a huge amount of power, I think. And that's really what drives this, is this idea that collectively a lot of these small business owners are sat there saying, well, what can we do? We don't have any power over sustainability or net zero or government policy because there's only 5 of us or there's only 10 of us. But really, it's how do we bring those people together to have collective action and go, if those 6 million businesses or even 10% of those 6 million businesses, that's still 600,000 companies all moving in the same direction and taking the same actions to reduce their carbon footprint or to improve their circularity or whatever it might be in this sustainability space, that's going to have a big impact and a big knock-on impact. So it's really how do we make sure that those small businesses aren't being left behind, that they're not being left without the kind of the tools and the information they need to take that action to have a positive impact. And that's why where Small 99 really, really kind of was, that's why I founded it and where it came from.
Yes, and I was having a look at your website this morning, and you've got, I think, ways that organisations can go on and find their net zero score, and you have this line about 30 minutes a week to reach net zero.
Yeah. I think this is what I've really tried to be conscious of, really, is that small business owners, the one thing they don't have is time. So anything where it's, attend this hour-long webinar, attend this 6-hour workshop, things like this, that it's just, even that is too much, even if it's free. Like, money isn't really the challenge necessarily here. It's more about time. So I've really tried to organise the website into that. Okay, if you've got 5 minutes, here's something that you can do in 5 minutes just to get you started. And then, if you've got 30 minutes a week, here's what you can do with just 30 minutes a week. Because normally you can do that while you're eating a sandwich or while you're, making a cup of tea in the morning and stirring your coffee or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be big actions that are going to be disruptive to your business. There's a lot you can start doing and start thinking about that aren't necessarily chores or really, I think disruptive is the right word. It's not going to be disruptive to your day. You can just do these things in the background while you're doing everything else.
Yes, because the one thing about small businesses is that they still seem to have the same amount of paperwork and government forms and things that they have to fill in that large businesses do. You just have less people to do it.
Precisely.
Excellent. Okay, so thank you for that. Your website is small99.co.uk. if anybody wants to find that. So let's move on to green washing. Now, this is a phrase that you hear an awful lot in the press. I mean, I remember, I think it was Friends of the Earth used to have the annual green washing awards for marketing. So green washing is this phrase that's been around, but what does it actually mean?
Yes, I think it's a phrase that's been around. I've heard it for kind of years and years, really, but it's come to the foreground really in the past 6 months, I'd say, with the CMA and their announcement that is that the the Markets Authority. I can't remember what the C stands for. There might be competition, but they've put they've brought together this document and this series of checks and balances almost to check for corporations on if they are greenwashing, and that's really set up the cat amongst the pigeons, and everyone's now paying a lot more attention to it because there's a bit more teeth behind it, I think. So the driving force really behind what greenwashing is that it's an intentional attempt to deceive or mislead around your environmental actions or credibility or sustainability actions. That's kind of all how I see it, and I think it really is as simple as that a lot of the time. And there's so many different examples of this at different ends of the scale, right through from packaging and how you're communicating something on packaging through to far bigger, more kind of grandiose oil company level sponsorships of certain schemes and things like that, which are all quite... There's a big kind of political and it's a very emotionally charged subject, which you can dive into on different ends of that scale. But ultimately, it is around trying to misrepresent your environmental credibility.
Yes, or doing... I mean, there's the sort of outright cheating, like Volkswagen cheating their emissions tests from a few years back, and to perhaps trying to be seen to be doing the right thing. So you have an example about McDonald's replacing plastic straws.
Yes, I think that's a really good one of the scale of that problem and that challenge is the carbon footprint of McDonald's and, the amount of beef. I'm not sure what the figures would be, but the amount of carbon footprint attached to their beef production is going to put the plastic straws in, it's not really relevant in terms of the grand scheme of things. And while it's a good move for them to do, they're probably increasing their carbon footprint because they're using more straws. And the question there would be, how do you just reduce your straw usage overall and consume less, not how do you replace it with a paper thing rather than plastic? And there's another one with McDonald's as well, not to focus on them too much, but they released a restaurant, I think it was just before Christmas, kind of 3-4 months ago. And they were claiming it was the first net zero restaurant, the McDonald's restaurant in the UK, which you would assume that would incorporate the entire element of the operations of McDonald's, but it was actually just the building. So it was a new building that had been built to a certain net zero standard. So it was probably fairly well insulated. It was using local materials and all that stuff. But the way they'd announced the press release drew them a lot of attention around the greenwashing element because it was misleading, because the claim they'd made was that it was the first net zero restaurant, where it was, that's not entirely true, because the staff driving to work in diesel cars and the beef burgers being shipped across and being fed soy is going to have a huge carbon footprint as well that's not being accounted for within that claim. So there's a lot out there of slightly broad claims being made, which to the untrained eye perhaps might seem true, but then is actually doing more damage than it claims it is.
Yes, one of the things that you comment on in your website is meaningless jargon. So using phrases like eco-friendly, ethical, sustainable, natural. But actually, if you're not disclosing what your sustainability initiatives are, the chances are you're not actually doing that much. You've just stuck a name on it.
Exactly. I think especially eco-friendly, I think, and even sustainable, that can mean very different things to very different people. And there's certain elements of sustainability where you can make a justification for actually increasing your carbon footprint while being sustainable, because it might be that the product's more circular and therefore it's more sustainable on a different metric. So you really have to be careful with these things and make sure that you're defining them and just being very clear about what you mean when you say these things, because there is so much jargon out there and a lot of it can just be misinterpreted or miscommunicated intentionally. I think that's the key word that I really want to focus on here, is the intentional misrepresentation of these things. It is quite a complex topic, and I think especially for smaller businesses, which is obviously our main kind of audience or experience, they don't always do it intentionally, and there's a lot of fear there around the greenwashing element, which I think is slightly unfounded because they're not doing it intentionally. It's more that it's just quite complicated.
Yes, so greenwashing is sort of the intentional misrepresentation. I think that's one of the sort of key elements about it. Now, one of the other phrases I've heard is green hushing. Now, that seems to be slightly... You don't see that in as many places, but what is green hushing?
It's the other end of the scale from greenwashing. So if greenwashing is the intentional misrepresentation of environmental claims, green hushing is basically saying absolutely nothing at all. So green hushing tends to be far more common with smaller companies where they are doing a lot of very good green things. You know, they are implementing electric vehicle charging. They are reducing the amount of paper they're using. They are reducing the amount of straws or whatever it might be that they're using. And they've made quite a lot of strides in that direction, but they're not perfect. And therefore, because they're not perfect, and because of the fears around greenwashing, they are therefore green hushing by saying absolutely nothing at all. And that's, in my mind, a lot more dangerous to a certain extent than the greenwashing is, because if you've gone quite far down this journey and quite successfully done that, but then you're not shouting about it, you are not then bringing all of your other companies in your influence area with you, and you are not necessarily communicating that, and you're not building confidence in the kind of broader business community that it can be done, because you've already done it, and therefore your impact gets lost. So green hushing is a really key thing to try and avoid, and it's the biggest challenge I face in getting businesses to actually just communicate what they're doing and the reasons why they're not doing it. So a good example of this might be renewable energy, where one of the main things we get asked a lot is if you Google where do I start with net zero, or where do I start with reducing my carbon footprint, changing to renewable energy supplier is the one that will always come up first. But considering, you know, most, I don't have the stats on it, but most small businesses are in, you know, they're renting premises from other organisations. So they might be in a cafe that's tenanted, or they might be renting an office in an office block. So they don't actually have control over their renewable energy, and therefore they often won't say whether they're using renewable energy or not on their website, because they don't have control over it, and they think if they say that they're not using it, that's going to attract greenwashing and a lot of, you know, flack from their customers for that. Whereas the reality would be that it's far more important, in my mind, to say the reason why you're not doing it, and saying, well, actually, we're not using renewable energy because we've tried, here's everything we've done to try and change that, but we physically can't, we don't control this. This is a problem in the broader industry. We're now working with other people who are experiencing these same challenges to try and overcome this together. That's really where I see the weakness of green hushing and where the danger lies, is that if no one's sharing the problems that they're encountering because they're too scared of greenwashing, it means that progress is really stifled and slows down quite a lot.
Okay, so small businesses are choosing, or actually it's not just small businesses, is it? But lots of businesses choose to hush about what they're saying, so green hushing, because they're frightened that they're going to get flack. Is this partly because companies that claim to be ethical tend to be viewed somehow more strictly than companies that are openly not ethical?
Yes, I think it is, and I think that's both external and internal. So there's typically the businesses who are doing the most green stuff, to use a perhaps simplified word, they are typically the ones who are also most aware of the critiques and the criticisms of what they're doing, and therefore they're going to be more aware internally of what they're doing and the weaknesses of what they're doing, and that then leads to them green hushing and not doing it, because they can see all the bad stuff that they're, you know, all the things they're missing out on. Whereas a company that perhaps doesn't have that insight and isn't quite as green minded will just be saying whatever they can because they see the benefits of it from a communication point of view. And that's really where it comes down, I think, is that those who are more environmentally minded tend to be their own worst enemy to a certain extent. Then they don't see how far they've come because they're too close to the game.
Okay, so you work with small businesses. Have you seen examples of small businesses where they have tried to be open about their path to net zero and have faced a backlash? Are there examples where that has actually happened?
Not that I'm aware of. So I've not really seen any of that actually occurring, which I think is quite interesting in that But most of the time it's very positive comments. And then occasionally you might see there's always going to be an extreme minority who will say, oh, electric vehicles are very bad for the planet for very, you know, all these reasons and kind of go off on one. But that's always the minority over their customer base. And that's not really aimed at the business. It's more aimed at the broader, you know, being their bond that they've got about the technology that they're running against. So I think the short answer is no. The long answer is there's always going to be someone somewhere that says something negative, and that's always what the business owner will focus on. But that's normally going to be, you know, one of 1,000 in terms of the actual feedback they're getting. And normally, you know, the other 900 of those are going to be very positive and supportive. And I think customers are interested as well. They're interested in what the business they're buying from is doing and what they can't do. Is, you know, if they've got solar panels on the roof, that seems quite a a positive thing for the small cafe and, you know, the remote location that they're in. And if they can't do it because of planning permission, that's also quite interesting to small business customers, I think, because the main thing I see is that customers will have a lot of patience and a lot of understanding that small businesses don't have a huge amount of money and power because they're small. So there's a lot of forgiveness there, I think.
That's interesting. What I'm really interested in is that you are working in this area are perhaps the perception of businesses getting a backlash is actually the perception is bigger than reality. In reality, there isn't so much of a backlash so long as people are honest about, well, we tried.
Precisely. I think that's the key thing to take away, really. I think a lot of the greenwash, the anger and the furor is aimed at larger companies because they do tend to have more power and more money. And small businesses see that and they translate that that's going to come for them. But they don't necessarily realise that there's a big difference in how a consumer or a customer will view a larger corporation like, you know, Next or McDonald's or Tesco's or whoever it is, compared to your small local cafe or pub or hairdresser. I don't think someone's going to treat the local hairdresser or their barber with the same level of critique as McDonald's, for example.
Yes, I mean, suspect from a small business owner, of course, that they're within the community where they might be being critiqued, which is a necessity more uncomfortable position to be in.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's more personal, isn't it, if someone's critiquing you on a Facebook post or whatever it might be. But again, I think that's such a small minority. I've not seen that much of it in reality. I think it's quite easy to imagine it, but it's much harder to then take the step out and go, well, actually, here's a list of all the things we've done. Here's a list of all the reasons why we've not done certain things because it's been, you know, we physically can't. And here's what we'd like to be doing, and here's what we've looked into. But I just don't see businesses taking those steps enough.
What you're also saying is suggesting is that if businesses aren't open about what they're doing, they actually, not only do they not influence the wider community, but they are also not getting the benefit of something that customers might want to see that they've done.
Exactly, because I think the idea of action is an interesting one where a lot of businesses think that action has to be a result. So if we take like electric vehicles, for example, where I had one conversation with someone who they're in kind of the North Yorkshire, they do a lot of off-road tree maintenance. So, you know, they're driving big 4x4s across the moors to, you know, cut down a tree that's got a disease or whatever it might be. So environmentally, that, you know, from a story point of view, cutting down trees is not the best on a net zero in a sustainability front, but it's with good reason. And they, you know, they'd looked into all of their electric vehicle options, of which there were basically none available, but they'd done so much research, and they'd looked into electric chainsaws, they'd looked into biofuels for chainsaws, they'd looked into, you know, the cost-benefit analysis for all of them, and they've done a huge amount of work. And I was like, well, why haven't you said this anywhere on the website? And it's because they were scared of, you know, I was like, well, we've not actually achieved anything. And my advice to them was really that if you've spent so much time looking into it and you've exhausted every avenue, you've done as much as you can do, and that is something that you should be shouting about, because it's not within your control that Range Rover or, you know, Toyota haven't released a full EV 4x4 yet. The fact that you've looked into it shows that you are willing and you have done as much as you can, and you've, you know, done your best to a certain extent on the net zero journey. And it's a matter of time, and therefore it's something that you're going to revisit in 2 years' time once the technology and once the pricing has changed. But I think because they hadn't said anything, it looks like they just hadn't bothered, when in fact they'd spent, you know, 12 hours doing research and they had bothered.
I think that's a really interesting point, that sometimes what seems like the sort of least risky option, I just won't say anything, means that you're missing out on some potentially very good publicity and very good messages.
Exactly. And I think a good amount of pressure potentially as well, where you can actually go, well, you know, is there a way that the local council or the local trade body can start working a way out to bulk buy electric chainsaws to bring the price down and have those conversations and start moving that influence element in the right direction.
Adam, that was great. That was Adam Bastock of Small 99. Thank you very much for that overview of net zero, but also of greenwashing versus the green hushing, which was a concept that was new to me. Adam, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast. From Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.